I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, what's up? Welcome back to the show. This is David Scales, your host of Surf Splendor. Excited to be back for another episode. Surf news for April 28th, 2017 with Scott Bass. quick note before I get into today's show. Hosting a film screening for Cyrus Sutton's new film, Island Earth. And hopefully you caught that episode last week, episode with Cyrus Sutton discussing the film. We're hosting the screening on Monday, May 15th. It's in Long Beach, California, so Southern California, Southern Los Angeles, North Orange County, and we would love to have you there. You need to secure tickets by May 8th, so that gives you a bit of time, and you could do it on our website, surfsplendorpodcast.com. There's a link to purchase the tickets, and we would just love to have you there, and we'd love to do more community events like this. So participate. And it's a great film, by the way, and actually for a great cause. I have a trailer of the film also on surfsplendorpodcast.com. So do not miss that. Thank you. And then, surf news today. Scott and I kind of get into it. Kind of crazy. The first 17 minutes of the show, after this intro, it kind of hit me out of left field. It's kind of a personal nature. Scott and I discussed it after the fact and decided to leave it in the show because I think, you know, there's been a little bit of tension underneath the surface between he and I, and I've gotten emails from listeners about it, and I know he has too. And so that's why we figured we would leave it in the show. Just why not? You know, like if you're curious about it, we'll just kind of have the discussion on the air. And also, I'm just curious to hear your feedback on it. You can contact me via email, hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can also comment on Instagram in a day or so after you listen or after this goes public. I will post an Instagram asking for feedback. And then Scott's email is scott@surfboardshow.com or I believe boardroom show. Let me see. downthelineradio@gmail.com is Scott's other email address. So reach out to us, give us feedback on it. I'm open to whatever take you have on it, even if you say I'm wrong, totally open to that. I'm just curious to hear thoughts. And so it's first 17 minutes of our discussion, and then we go into surf news, and then it kind of comes up again at the end of the show for the last couple of minutes. So stick around till the end, and then I have some closing thoughts in the outro of this show, too. So I will say, arguably, the most entertaining episode of Surf Splendor perhaps ever. So anyways, enjoy it. I'll be back at the end of the show to sign us off. Thanks.
Yeah, guy, down the line, Surf Talk Radio. It's April 27th, 2017. And that's Grazing in the Grass by the great Hugh Masekela coming at you on KLSD. Just kidding. Down the line, Surf Talk Radio, Scott and David with you. Scott Bass, David Lee Scales.
I was like, where am I right now? Maybe I'm in the wrong studio.
It's like 1967... Los Angeles Jazz Radio.
Oh, is that really?
I was transporting you.
Wow, man. That was amazing. Sal Masekela's dad.
That's right.
Hugh Masekela.
Hugh.
Shout out to our boy, Sal. What's up, Scott? Good to see you, dude.
Yeah, man. Good to be here, bro.
I didn't think I'd see you this week or next week, given that your yearly massive event is coming into town.
Oh, I know, right? The Boardroom Show, International Surfboard Show, May 6th and 7th. please come down and join David and Scott and meet us and see us and check out all the killer surfboards and be a part of the panel discussions. And there's all sorts of stuff. Of course, honoring Al Merrick, the legendary icon of foam, presented by U.S. Blanks, Icons of Foam, tribute to the master shape off. 10 international shapers, David, 10 of them.
Did you queue up my interview with Al?
I haven't. Oh, no. I'll try.
That sounds like a very sincere I'll try.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, we're pretty excited. I'm pretty stoked on the shape off. It's going to be a lot of fun, and they're going to be shaping, replicating a classic Al Merrick design. And we've got shapers from all over the world coming in, from Basque region of Spain, from
Hawaii,
Australia. It's going to be good stuff, man.
Yeah, so seriously, though, are you flustered? Where are you at right now? Are you everything coming together?
Yeah, this is our 10th year, our 17th show. We've been doing it a while. So certainly there's last-minute stuff that just flies at you around this time of the show, a week before the show. But, I've got it mostly handled. There's going to always be bumps in the road, but it's,
Is there any way to gauge what the attendance will be like in advance?
Based on pre-sales of tickets, I'd say it's going to be pretty good,
Yeah. I mean, I would think, though, it seems to me that most of the ticket sales happen at the door in past years.
Yeah.
So, like, but from my experience, obviously, I've been coming the last 4+, maybe 5 years. It is always busier and busier and busier, And like what I thought was really great attendance 2 or 3 years ago got dwarfed the next year.
Yeah.
So I would expect a bigger and better show. I mean, especially, like Al Merrick, I don't know that it gets bigger than that or more interesting and relevant than that in modern surfboard design.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And the marketing just hit, like the ads in the local magazines or the local newspapers start this today, literally today. The ads on the radio started today. I was actually listening to them on the way in. So we've got advertising on Sports Talk Radio in San Diego, 1360, Extra Sports, 1360. And we're in Bliss Magazine. We're in Surfer Magazine. We're in Deep Magazine. We're in the Coast News, which is the local beach rag down there. And of course, we're doing a lot of guerrilla marketing. We're all over the internet on Surfline and just through various other places. So,
podcast marketing,
Podcast marketing. Thank
you very
much.
The most relevant media outlet there is today, I would say.
Completely relevant and cutting edge and at the tip of the iceberg, changing, like we're way ahead of the curve.
Completely. Not fettered at all by red tape and bureaucracy.
No, we can sit here and talk boardroom show all episode.
We can curse.
And you, speaking of that, okay, that brings me to an email I got from James H. He said, "Hey, Scott, I enjoy the podcast, but would appreciate if you cut the F-bombs. It's unnecessary to prove your point, and I imagine I'm not the only one who doesn't enjoy such abrasive language. I don't think you need it in order to keep your street cred, James." I would agree with you, James. I will try my darndest to stop the F-bombs.
Nice swerve right there.
I agreed, and I apologize because I don't think that – I think there are times and places for F-bombs, but perhaps in a controlled podcast, not the right place for that.
James is a sensitive lad.
I don't know, but James.
I'm cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, I think I am too. I want to be. I agree. Let me just say, I agree, and I'll do my best to not cuss, and it's not something I'm proud of.
Have you ever heard me curse?
No, I don't think I have.
It's not really part of my lexicon of vocabulary.
What? Cursing makes you sound like an idiot.
Does it?
I think. I always tell my kids that. I'm like, look, if you want to sound unintelligent, use the F-bomb over and over and over again.
See, I'm a huge fan of cursing from really, really old people and really young people. That's when it's hilarious to me. But like,
luckily, I don't fall into those categories.
You're getting close.
Oh my God.
Should I publish this photo on Instagram with your gray hair?
I'm young at heart, my friend. Young at heart.
That's funny, James. I'm not sure that it's a sign of intelligence or not. I just feel like there's oftentimes better choices of words that will, be more descriptive and serve the purpose of what I'm trying to say a little bit more colorfully than a curse word, so I usually try to opt for something else, but I'm not saying I don't ever.
Samuel L. Jackson curses a lot. right? He uses the F-bomb a lot. And it's kind of like, first of all, it loses some of its power if you overuse it, right?
Sure.
And I think it does, and I love Samuel L. Jackson. I guess if there's one guy that could get away with it, it's him, because it's almost, you know, he uses it so much that it's almost part of his identity,
in a way. It's his brand.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want that as my
Samuel
brand.
Samuel F. Jackson, starring in Snakes on a Plane.
Jacob Atherley sends an email. He says, "Hey, Scott, why aren't you posting the new podcast on Down the Line Surf Talk Radio? I have to go through Surf Splendor now. Don't let the goofy-haired wiener steal your gig and then call it Surf News."
It's already been stolen, buddy.
I totally agree with you, Jacob. And I'll give you some backstory. I switched over. For years, David was like, "Dude, how many listeners do you got?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I can't track them. I'm a kook, basically. I'm a technological idiot." And he goes, "Blah blah blah. Use Libsyn." So I switched over to Libsyn, and during the switch, somehow or another, I guess I messed up or Libsyn messed up. I don't know who messed up, but now it's worse than it ever was. Like,
really?
Yeah. And I've tried to reach out to support, and they're like, "Yeah, why did you do it this way? You should have done it this way." And I'm like, "Well, great. Why am I paying you? You know, like, I was hoping somebody would kind of like take care of this, you know?" And I've done something. I'm just going to say it's my fault. I've done something so that it doesn't. Here's the so that's the backstory, is that something screwed up on my end, on my RSS feed. My RSS feed goes to a URL that is basically doesn't exist, like it is nothing. And the Libsyn people are like, "We can't help you. It's too late." And I'm like, "Great, you know?" And I've tried to go to iTunes and tweak it and blah, blah, blah. Here's, if you want to get the real Down the Line Surf Talk Radio without having it be called Surf News and be rebranded or whatever, because I think that's wrong too.
What are you talking about?
Just what I said. I think it's wrong. I think
get
it's
out of here.
I think it's Down the Line Surf Talk Radio. I think you should respect the fact that it is this thing that you came into. Let's keep it branded the same thing instead of calling it Surf. I'm just saying, look, you don't have to agree with me.
That is not how this started at all.
I'm just saying, you don't have to agree with me. I'm just saying it's been Down the Line Surf News for 10 years. Like, let's keep it the same. Like, why rebrand it? I agree with you.
We came in together. I'm the one that records all of it.
Dude, you do the hard work. I'm just saying, branding-wise. Okay, let me get to my point. Okay. And then we can argue. We'll argue later.
I can't believe you're even saying that.
I'm saying it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I've been harboring this. Now it's coming out. See what a cup of tea does? Just if it was coffee, I'd be dropping F-bombs. You can go to, as David knows, you can go to boardroomshow.com and Down the Line Surf, all of the Down the Line Surf pods, the ones from way back when, 10 years ago, before David was in the picture.
Correct.
That's true. I thought you would bite on that. Anyway, go there, boardroomshow.com, and there's a page with everything on it. And other than that, I guess I'm an idiot. I'm a technological geek.
Okay. Let me
oh
just
God. Here
give
we go.
No. Let's seriously have the discussion.
We're going to air this out.
Let's air it out because
you got boxing
I think
gloves or
not even about that.
No, I'm just kidding you, dude. I don't care.
But I do think that listeners have confusion about it as well, so it's good. See, the fact that you don't silence your phone is part of the reason, Scott. Come on.
That's the charm.
So, no, but I think
it's
that
like
listeners...
an old guy. How do I turn it off?
I think that listeners do have confusion about it. So, let me just break it down real quick on what my side of the story is.
Oh, God. Here we go.
No interrupting either, Scott.
Oh, sorry.
So, when you and I first linked up years ago, I had been wanting surf podcasts. And there was like a limited amount, obviously, of them out there, but yours was one of them that I tracked down. And I saw that you had gone through some different co-hosts and at that time didn't have one. And so you weren't publishing that regularly. There wasn't consistency to it. So I had just started Surf Splendor and I was doing profile pieces and I wanted to do surf news pieces, like regular updates on what was going on with contest wins. So I reached out to you and I was like, "Hey, dude, I want to do this. It looks like you're doing that and these things might fit together. Do you want to give it a shot?" And you're like, "Yeah." And it's like, "Well, how do we rebrand? What do we do?" And it's like, "Well, let's both just record and then we'll publish separately. And then if it gets wings, we'll figure out what we want to do." Well, ultimately, we've never made any decision beyond that. We both started recording separately at the time, publishing separately. And it got to the point where you haven't been recording at all. I'm recording everything and then sending you the file. And we're both publishing separately still. So if we want to rebrand or whatever, I'm open to having that conversation, obviously. But at the same time, like you said, you've run into these technical issues. I haven't felt comfortable. Like, look, dude, if I'm going to give you the file and this is under your thing, but you're not able to technically support what we're doing, I'm apprehensive to go through that path. You know, so that's my only...
What are you apprehensive about exactly?
Like, if it's not showing up on
right,
your iTunes,
I got that. Yeah.
Then listeners can't get it.
Right, but what's the apprehension?
Listeners can't get the show. Through the most...
Right, but why... That's just on me, though. That's not on you. I mean, they can get it through Surf Splendor.
No, but if we rebranded it and it was all in your hands,
oh, no,
and
no,
they
no.
go to
okay,
I,
yeah.
if it's all
no,
on
no,
down
I
the
agree.
Line
I totally
and they
agree.
Go to your
no,
iTunes
no, no.
and it's not uploading.
I totally agree with what you're saying. Let me just say this. We haven't ever had the discussion. I guess we're having it now. This wasn't planned, obviously. My feeling is you're much more technically savvy than I am, obviously. And you've done a great job of branding Surf Splendor, by the way. But if we're going to announce the show as Down the Line, like when we come on, we go, welcome, it's Down the Line Surf Talk. And then it's not called Down the Line Surf Talk on wherever it is, wherever it's distributed. Then there's that can create confusion. Mm-hmm. So it's my hope that you and I can come to an agreement where it's called Down the Line Surf Talk wherever you get it. So that if you go to Surf Splendor, you're getting Down the Line Surf Talk. If you go wherever, it's just called Down the Line Surf Talk. Because that's really what this is, right? I mean, that's how we introduce the show every week.
Well, that's how you introduce the show. But I think if we're going
to
do it
So you want to rebrand it to Surf News.
Well, I think if we're doing it together, and I don't, it doesn't need to be Surf News. But I think if we're going to do it together, then it should be rebranded as neither of our identity and like a brand new identity. I think that would be the best move.
Because I think that you would lose, I think we're losing a lot of traction if we do that. Like we have years and years and years of the show called Down the Line Surf Talk.
And now, but I have, so my question would, to you would be, or to the audience or whoever is, who's built a stronger brand identity at this point? Because if Surf Splendor
yeah,
has
I
more listeners, then why would we revert back to Down the Line? I know you have a lot
No,
more
I'm not saying to change Surf Splendor. I'm just saying within Surf Splendor, instead of it being called Surf News, like you've got Surf Splendor and that is all of these great interviews. And then you also have Surf News. So I'm saying under the Surf Splendor umbrella
yeah.
is these interviews, is Down the Line Surf Talk, and probably some other things that you've yet to be developed that you're going to develop on at some level. I don't know.
Totally be open to that. I guess my thought was I didn't want to just take your name and start using it under the Surf Splendor moniker and like, hey, every other week I do Down the Line.
Well,
radio.
I think if I wasn't such an idiot technologically, like if I wasn't having these problems, I thought I was going to resolve these problems with your insight into Libsyn, and I failed.
Yeah.
And so... you know, at this point, you have the leverage, basically. I don't, you know, I, because more people are getting to it from Surf Splendor just because I've hammered away hours trying to figure out how to fix this thing through Libsyn support.
I couldn't believe how much money you spent. When you told me what you'd spent transitioning it, I was like, dude, I've never spent that much money with them.
Yeah, well, I wanted to, I mean, I, yeah. So that's the other thing. I've got all, it's like, it's driving me crazy to
yeah.
the point where I'm like, David needs to run this because I've screwed it to the point that
yeah.
it's like, I don't know. And, but more than anything, I think my ego and my pride wants it to be called Down the Line because it's this thing that I built.
Yeah.
And I'm just being honest with you that, you know, you obviously can do whatever you want on your site, but I would love it if you would embrace with me the Down the Line Surf Podcast moniker. And as far as like ownership of that name or whatever, I'm totally willing to... you know, for you and I to work together.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm not like, you know, lying in the, you know, like I'm not that tied to it. You know, like my feeling has always been sort of laissez-faire, like it's going to work out. Let's mm-hmm. just be good to each other about this. Let's not be, you know, dicks about it or what, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
so,
and
I'm not willing to ruin our friendship over business. Let's put
yeah.
it that way.
Well, and there's very little business, by the way.
Very little friendship.
Like, oh, that too. So, yeah, I guess what I want to communicate to you is like, I've not meant to subvert you in any way or like to take any sort of your brand in any sort of way. Like I've felt the same way as you. It's like, hey, we just want to produce content for people to listen to
yeah.
and get it out there in the most convenient format for them to listen to, which obviously is just iTunes for them to be able to subscribe and get it on a weekly basis. So that's been only my only effort through all of it. So
well, good. So we just had a hug out and we've hugged it out.
Is that what that was?
I don't know.
I think listeners want to know, like I've gotten message from listeners going like, hey, what's going on? Or why do you do it this way or not that way or whatever? So I'm okay having the conversation.
So I guess
to
summarize then, you can obviously get Down the Line Podcast through boardroomshow.com. You can obviously get it through Surf Splendor and a And I think, and I'm not going to speak for you, but I think you're going to start to brand it as Down the Line Surf Pod instead of Surf News. Are you comfortable with that or no? It doesn't look like you are.
I'm not uncomfortable. Again, are you comfortable
with that? I am. Oh, no, I'm totally am. I totally am.
Okay.
I totally am.
All right. What? Nothing. I'm just processing as we're talking. I feel like I'm getting lulled into something without fully.
Well, you know what? If you're not comfortable, don't do it. I'm not.
Well, I'll figure it out. Doing a quick hard pivot. I have a couple of updates from our previous show. You mentioned the issue at San Onofre. Speaking of rebranding, let's rebrand Save Trestles into this new issue with the nuclear power plant.
I'm glad you brought this up. Yes.
You mentioned it on the show, which
wasn't a big discussion.
It wasn't the first time I had heard of it, but I had only seen it very, very briefly. I think maybe there was an article on Surfline prior to you mentioning it, but that was it.
Yeah.
We published this show in the afternoon. The very next morning, almost like in the middle of the night, we both had an email from Chad Nelson from Surfrider Foundation, the CEO of Surfrider Foundation. He goes, "Hey guys, thanks for your discussion. I thought it was a fair take on things, and I appreciate the call out to members, you know, for people to join Surfrider Foundation. Meanwhile, you can be assured that we are hardly working on a solid strategy regarding the San Onofre situation, and it'll be available on our site soon."
Yeah.
And sure enough, they took a stance shortly thereafter, and then a bunch of other media outlets actually covered the topic as well.
Well, and did you see what the World's Chris Morrow wrote some piece for the World Surf League where he works? Did you see this, the WSL?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so Chris Morrow followed up and basically said, "Hey, look, here's the WSL's take on this." And I'm reading it right now, but the dilemma. Here's what Chris said. "There's a plan to bury over 3.5 million pounds of radioactive waste, spent fuel, less than 200 yards from the shoreline at San Onofre. Edison, the company that owns the San Onofre, Edison is the Southern California Edison, is insisting that their solution is a safe one. Local watchdog groups are sounding alarms about the canisters that will hold the radioactive fuel, which has a half-life of 70,000 years, while the canisters are guaranteed for 25 years.
It's insane.
The concrete structures that will be stored in are only good for 10 years, and if those structures fail, then the guarantee on the canisters is voided. Yet the California Coastal Commission unanimously approved the utilities company's plan to store these spent fuel rods right there at the beach at Trestles. By the way, these containers are only half an inch thick. By contrast, most other countries use thick wall casks of 10 to 20 inches thick. Not only that, but the Coastal Commission has given Edison 20 years to come up with a plan for the canisters to be inspected, repaired, maintained, monitored, and transported without cracks. Therein lies the problem. I'm trying to get to what the WSL's take on it is.
It seems like it's just an assessment of the situation more than anything.
Yeah, it is.
It's not like taking a stance.
He says here, Chris says, that given Southern California Edison's history of bad predictions about safety and reliability, right, there's plenty of reason to be fearful.
Yeah.
And the backstory, I would suggest that you read this. It's basically saying the risks are real. You know, there's a lot going on. There's lawsuits. It's actually very well written, and it's sadly, I haven't read it, so I don't want to sit here and bore the listeners, but you should go to worldsurfleague.com and find this information that Chris Morrow wrote. It's a really good article. Chris does a good job, of course, the former editor of Surfer Magazine. And, of course, there's a call to action, what you guys can do, who you can call, how you can get involved. And it's good stuff. Now, I would suggest to you that what's the biggest event of the year in Southern California from a surf standpoint besides the Boardroom International Surfboard Show? It is the Hurley Trestles Pro, right? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, that's what it's called, but I would think the U.S. Open's bigger than that.
No.
I mean, for you and I, it's not, but for like for tourism and for people who attend the event.
If you say the U.S. Open, you might as well say Coachella. I mean, it's kind of like...
You said surf event.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't Coachella a surf event? Surfers are there. I mean, that's my point. It's like, isn't it all the same thing? It's just youth. It's the youth.
I mean,
industry.
One takes place in the desert, one takes place in the ocean. I hear the point you're making, but what I'm saying is, yeah, what has more relevance to us, the Trestles event.
For sure. Yeah, the Trestles event is the biggest surf event in Southern California. The U.S. Open isn't really a surf industry event in my eyes. It's an event to highlight the youth industry, if you will. It's more than surf. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
There's concerts. There's blah, blah, blah. But the U.S. Open and the Hurley Pro, like, this is an opportunity for Hurley and the WSL to kind of come out. And they've made a stand on their website about what you can do. And I think they could – I mean, it would be refreshing to see them kind of go, hey, we're against this, and this is what we're doing at our event to, you know – yeah. Explain our frustration.
Right.
What that is, what that activation looks like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah.
But there's ample opportunity for the WSL and surfers and lovers of the Southern California beach to go, hey, Daryl Issa, Dana Rohrabacher, all these people, Senator Feinstein, Senator Kamala Harris, you know, Hurley, the WSL, and surfers around the world are making a stand against this right now. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, it would probably get a lot more eyeballs on the Hurley Pro if they did something cool and classy and, you know, did it the right way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that means, like, whatever, a flyby of airplanes that are carrying signs, or I don't know what it is, but
maybe
all this, everybody on the beach puts on a red hat or something, or I, you know, I don't know, but something powerful needs to be done so that we get our point across. This is way more important than the toll road. Like, this is a million times more important than the toll road. And like I said, you know, Save Trestles needs a question mark. It used to be Save Trestles with an exclamation mark. And my opinion, it's Save Trestles with a question mark. Until this is resolved, Trestles and the rest of Southern California, for that matter, is under a sort of a dark cloud of nuclear spent fuel rods.
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard Kelly Slater talking recently about Fukushima and how, like, nobody's even discussing that situation anymore. And the fallout is so vast and sustained, and it'll go on forever and ever. And he's like, even the machines that are going down to, like, treat things and search for whatever was lost are melting the machinery itself because of the radiation and higher incidents of radiation in, like, farms in Iowa and things like that, all tracked back to the Fukushima fallout. So this stuff has long-term serious, serious detrimental effect on the environment, our well-being, our children's well-being, all that sort of stuff. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
So we can't let it happen again in our own backyard, obviously.
No. And, you know, so anyway, yeah.
One other conversation that we need to follow up on that we were talking about last time was Alex Gray and his boards being broken by American Airlines. Apparently, they have acquiesced to the internet's demands, and they paid out Alex $3,500 in reimbursement for board bag fees and also the boards themselves.
Oh, good. I wonder if they did some internal investigation. Those boards look like they were run over and somebody was laughing while they were doing it. That's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So that's that. You have any other follow-up, or do you want to get into the proper meat and potatoes of the show?
I don't have any follow-up that I think of right now, but no.
Well, there was a number of things that have happened since you and I last met. Bell's Beach was kind of the main.
Can I just say that the last three WSL events have been spectacular and been really fun to watch, and they've done a really good job. Like, okay. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
I do, yeah.
And I'd also like to say that you and I discussed last time, you know, I got a hold of the headhunter copy for the CEO of the WSL. And the one thing was, there was a couple of fun things to talk about. But one of them was premium subscription service and what that looks like. And you and I discussed, would we pay an X amount per year to watch it? And we both agreed, you know what, we would. Now, publicly, you know, in a parking lot, there's going to be a lot of people that say, no way, I'm over it, I'm never going to watch. But those are the same people that in, you know, the dark shadows of their home office, they're probably going to pay and watch. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest to you, just based on nothing scientific, just you and me and my gut feeling, that a lot of people would do that. A lot of people would pay a premium price to watch. And if it's $10 a year and they've
we agreed on $60 right, is what we're comfortable with.
Right. $60 is totally, that's killer.
For the year.
Yeah, because that's what Surfline's number.
To watch the events live in the same way you would watch a pay-per-view live.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, can you watch the heat analyzer the next day for free? Those are all things that the WSL team needs to figure out.
Let me, before you continue on, this is why I would be willing to pay for it. During the Bells event, when John did the alley-oop against Mick Fanning, I think it was round three, maybe?
Oh, my God.
Or round five?
That was insane.
So watching that heat unfold and being able to see that live is worth the price of admission, where you're in the moment. You have no idea if John needs a score. He's the world champ. He's got the most innovation of anybody on tour, surfing against the most traditional surfer on tour at a very traditional wave. And I'm watching it going, how's John going to come up with this score? And then he gets a wave and he goes into the air and the wind flutters his board under his feet. You think he's going to fall? He stomps it and you're just like, oh my gosh, what's the score going to be? Living with that level of anticipation and anxiety and excitement is worth the price of admission. I don't feel like seeing that alley-oop the next day on the internet has any of the same impact. It has very, very small degree of the same impact.
Yeah, I totally agree with
that's
that.
That's what I'm paying.
I totally agree with that. And I asked some people. I asked some random people if they would pay, and they all said, yeah, they would. And it was sort of under this caveat. It's sort of like when the San Diego Chargers left San Diego and they went to L.A. The owners picked up the NFL team and moved them.
Yeah.
And within San Diego, there was this real the first stage of grief was, hell no, I'll never watch the Chargers. I'm over them. They're lame. And now we're something like 5 or 6 months into the process, and we've all gone through some of the grieving moments, the different stages of grief. And we're at a point now where the NFL draft is today. And people that are fans of the Chargers have to really start to kind of look at themselves and go, am I still going to be a fan? Do I still feel the way I did the day that the carpet was ripped out from underneath me? And the overwhelming sense is more people are kind of like, yeah, you know what? Why not? They're still my team. Yeah, I don't like the ownership, but the ownership could probably change and blah, blah, blah. And that's sort of the feeling I'm getting when I talk to people about paying for the WSL. You get a lot of, no way will I ever watch the WSL or give them a dime, And it's that sort of grumpy, like first stage of grief, like anger, basically. But you start to talk to them for 15 minutes, and before you know it, they're like, yeah, I probably would pay. Because, I tell them, well, you mean you're not going to watch, you don't want to watch the Fiji event unfold? You don't want to watch Chopu event unfold? You don't want to watch the Pipe Masters unfold? And oh, by the way, some of the events that I thought, like, for instance, I used to sort of write off Bells, like, oh God, it's kind of boring. Why? Well, okay, can they get two or three hits on the outside and then finish the wave with the hit on the inside? And frankly, that did get kind of boring. It was kind of NSSA, three to the beach, length of ride, finish the ride, and you get a score. But what's happened with this aerial movement that's evolved to a point that John's doing, and Gabriel and a lot of these guys are doing stuff on the outside that's pretty incredible. And guys are turning heats based on one move rather than, okay, here we go. Did he do his three turns and did he finish on the inside? Okay, we'll give him a 7.97. Now we're getting one maneuver, two maneuver rides that are 993. It changes the vibe, the excitement level of watching that event now.
Yeah.
And so point is, I think people are willing to pay. And I'm just telling the WSL that's our gut feeling. And I know that David and I would pay, and everybody I've talked to would pay. And is it because I travel in circles of surf fans? Probably, and I'm sure there's the salty guy that's like, I never pay for Surfline either. And, I've got a black beaver tail and a pintail and I surf, So I'm sure there's going to be some salty guys that aren't into it, mm-hmm. but they yeah. weren't. Those are the guys that weren't into it anyway.
Right. Yeah. I have a feeling that whatever percentage says that they will pay might actually be enough to where they would generate more income from that core list follower, than they would from selling advertisement anyway. And then the people who say that they don't probably will jump on board at some point anyways. So I think it would probably be.
Now, the interesting thing is how do you begin to present that to the viewing public?
Right. That is
like that. Cause you're going to get some vitriol. You're going to get some back. You're going to get a lot of negative PR on, just internet haters that are going to go crazy over this.
Yeah.
And again, they're the ones that probably never watch anyway,
yeah.
but they're going to be the vocal minority. And so, how you massage the release of this information that's why you have PR people.
I think the smartest move from their standpoint would be to hire, let's say, the most thoughtful podcasters in the surf sphere to talk about it in a glowing manner.
And, wow. They don't have to hire us. We just did.
And yeah, just like send those checks to Scott and David.
I think that what they need to do instead of trying to spin it is just be brutally honest. Just be like, hey, you know what? We're going to go out of business unless we change our model. Mm-hmm. And you guys love surfing. We love surfing. Everyone loves the surf tour. If you love the surf tour, you'll be with us on this. If you're not, we understand. We hate to see you go. We wish you the best. We hope you come back to us. But these are the facts. Like, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
You're the same people that were going, oh, my God, they're spending so much money. How are they monetizing this? Well, guess what? You were right. And now we are going to monetize it. And here we go. Now, that might be, excuse me, that might be a little bit harsh in my tone, but you get the idea. I think brutal or rigorous honesty here in this case would be a smooth way to do it. You know, because people are so overspin. Like, everyone knows, everyone reads between the lines.
Interestingly, I just went through this cycle of thought and psychology regarding Spotify. Like, I've used Spotify for free since its inception.
Yeah.
And everybody around me is like, dude, it's $10 a month. Just pay it. And then you can play whatever song you want rather than it shuffling your playlists or whatever and making you listen to commercials. And what's happened is I think they obviously have algorithms that track how many hours you listen to their service. And the more you listen, the more commercials they start playing. And it just becomes increasingly annoying.
I stopped listening because of this.
But you didn't pay the premium?
I never paid. No, I never paid.
Okay, see, I gave in. A week ago, I think it was I was celebrating something and I was hosting a party. Oh, it was Easter. I was hosting Easter and like families coming over. And I'm like, I cannot sit through one more Spotify commercial through today's festivities. So that morning, I just like paid the $10. I've never been happier. It's the best $10 I've ever spent. It's so well spent, you know? And like, again, $10 to in Southern California, as expensive as it is to live here, $10 is nominal. You know, it's like, it's nothing. Like, I'm not going to notice the $10 missing every month.
You know what my problem is with the $10 subscription deal is?
Is that you got it for free forever?
No, it's that all of a sudden I have like 30 of these.
Of course.
And all of a sudden I'm looking at my bills and I'm getting dinged every which way. It's like everything, you know what I mean? And so that's my problem, is that I don't mind the $10. It's when I look at it and I go, oh my God, I'm spending $130 every month on services I don't really use as much as I'd like to.
Or that there's a free version of, if you can just listen to it.
Like Sirius XM. Like, I pay for Sirius XM. Why don't I just stream that on my computer?
Well, that would be one or the other. You either have Sirius or you have Spotify.
Well, I have Sirius in my car. Does Spotify come in your car?
Through Bluetooth.
Okay.
Your car's got Bluetooth for sure.
Yeah.
It's new enough.
And does Spotify have podcasts and talk radio and all that stuff?
No, but iTunes does, and that's all free.
Yeah. But doesn't it cost to stream it?
No.
The data?
Oh, I mean, I get enough data where
You have it on your hard drive, on your phone.
On my phone, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I listen to all the podcasts and audiobooks I want without ever going over my data. Anyways, the Spotify thing, I'm happy paying it at this point. You know, I was the latest adapter out of all my friends.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to have done it eventually.
I used to use it a lot. And then I was like you, I was getting too many commercials and I was over it.
Dude, the commercials, and they play the same exact ones. So they just annoy.
It's just Geico or Progressive. It's some auto insurance.
It's the worst.
It is.
Anyways, let's talk about Bell's Beach a little bit.
I just did. I said, no,
go ahead. Well, there was a number of storylines that I'd like to touch on, and then you can jump in with any that you want that you think are worth teasing apart. Long and the short of it is Jordy took down Kyle Abelli in the final. Courtney Conlogue beat Stephanie Gilmore in the final. I want to say a word about Jordy because you and I have said, you know, he's one of the most talented surfers to not actually win the title yet. He finished second last year. Does he look positioned this year? I'm going to say, in the first couple of events, I wasn't too convinced. In this event that he won, he didn't win it convincingly, but he won it looking really tame and mild. And it made me kind of remember Kelly Slater in previous years that he won, where he's got his sights actually on the end of the year. He's not coming out with a huge bang. He's coming out with this kind of goal that's long term, feeling like, look, if I lose one heat here, or one heat there, I'm not too worried about it. I'm confident enough in my surfing that I don't need to blow minds right now. I can just do my thing, push through guys, blow the tail when I need to. And I will turn it up a notch when it gets to that point in the event, or certainly that point in the season. And I'm not even going to get flustered by my losses. He just seemed to have a certain mild-manneredness to him that I thought was actually indicative of a maturity, I guess, that I haven't seen in him before. I used to see a volatility. Now I see him with a confidence and a maturity that I hadn't seen before that makes me think he's more well-positioned for a world title. Seems to have his eye on the prize, the end prize.
I think we have to wait and see on that, right? Because I would agree with everything you're saying, but I'm also hesitant to say he's matured to a level where he's ready to win a world title. Because what I need to see from Jordy is a big time loss and see where, and see a comeback from that. Now, you could argue we've already had that, you know, in these first three events, and he proved that he came back from it with a win at Bells, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm still, I've just seen too much of that volatility that you speak of.
In past years.
Yeah, in past. So yeah. I'm not willing to bet the house on Jordy.
I'm not willing to bet the house. I'm just seeing these early signs that I'm kind of cluing in on.
Right. We have to wait and see then is what you're
saying. It does take time. Whereas like John, on the other hand, has come out with a bang. Like we haven't actually seen a world title holder come into their second season, like their defending season, with as much power as John has. Like in the last 5 years, from Joel Parkinson in 2012, where has he been since then? You know, Adriana De Souza, Gabriel Medina, who else am I? Mick Fanning in that amount of time. Like nobody has come through and then made a threat on the following year. So John has. He's come through and he's won. Did he win Margaret? I can't remember at this point.
Oh my God, you sound like me. You don't even remember?
I think he won Margaret. Yeah, he won Margaret. But he's in first position still after the third event. So John's making a clear run for the world title.
Now, you and I mentioned Jordy, Kolohe, Julian, and one other guy that...
Jordy. Oh.
Jordy, Kolohe, Julian, and was it Felipe?
No, we only mentioned three.
Was it just three?
Yeah.
Those three guys are in position. They're at the prime of their careers. You would even argue Jordy's almost long in tooth. They have to strike while the fire's hot. Pardon the cliche. After three events, Julian has really got to be the guy that you're looking at and going, oh my God, has he fallen off the edge of the earth here?
What is he in 22nd? Like,
yeah, he's way down the pack.
Yeah.
He has not had a good Australia.
Yeah.
And Kolohe and Jordy, both looking pretty good.
Completely. Yeah, Jordy's in second place. So
if Kolohe and Jordy...
Kolohe's in fifth.
They're both primed to win a world title.
Yeah.
After three events, right?
Yeah.
So now we're going into the next leg. Brazil's kind of an interesting... It's almost like a standalone. And then they go to the South Pacific for two events, right? And mm-hmm. then to J-Bay. So I guess those two of those three have withstood the first round of attack, so to speak.
My money was on Julian.
I know. I think I was.
He's in 16th, by the
way. Kolohe looks solid, and Jordy looks solid.
So
Kolohe maybe a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, I mean his results don't show it, but I would agree he looks really good. The other couple of storylines that emerged: Frederico Moraes is unexpectedly becoming a favorite of mine. Like, the guy is so solid. I think I've been apprehensive about him just because I think his style is too straight-legged and there's just something robotic about it that I don't love.
Well, those tall guys have that sort of bead.
Yeah.
Sort of that, like, it's almost just too tall to do all the really cool things that you see normal 5'4" guys do, because most of the tour is 5'4".
Yeah, Slater's 5'9", I think.
He's the tall guy on tour. You know, I mean, I know there's some big guys. Owen Wright, but most of those guys are super tiny.
But he's just so freaking consistent. And he goes and he surfs big conditions like Bells and Sunset and Haliva during the Triple Crown. He made the finals of both those events this last year. And he just doesn't back down. He goes into sections that guys kick out of or back away from, even big guys back away from. He goes straight into it, gets smacked down, and rides out of it and then makes the section. And you're like, what the heck? It's really, really impressive. So I like Frederico Moraes. Another thing that was funny that happened is during that Mick Fanning and John Florence heat, you texted me when John landed that alley-oop, you go, this is the changing of the guard. We just witnessed a real hallmark of a changing of the guard where Mick Fanning is doing his wraps and his very traditional bell surfing.
Mick Fanning is doing as good a surfing as he can possibly do. He was shredding.
Totally. And in that style of surfing, as good as can be done on a surfboard. Like, yeah. That's the pinnacle of it.
Yeah.
And John just did better by doing something completely different and radical that we haven't yet seen done at Bell's. So you go, you said to me in that text, you're like, hey, this is the changing of the guard. We just witnessed it. And I go, and my reply to you is like, hey, you know what's even sadder is that Kelly Slater's watching it from his computer because he lost 3 days ago. Like, yeah, it's sad enough that
Kelly can do those errors or at least attempt them and maybe make them.
He could do them a lot.
I think what I said is Mick Fanning's career is over.
Yeah, it's over.
It's officially over.
It's over because he can't do it. And I'm like, yeah, but Kelly's not even participating in it anymore.
Yeah, Kelly's 44, Mick's 34.
Yeah, I mean, true. But I think to your point as well is Kelly's more positioned to do that error than Mick is. Kelly's more likely to be able to compete with John on that level.
Right.
But the reality is, like in terms of innovation he is, but the reality is in terms of competitiveness or maybe commitment to the tour.
Maybe.
He's not. And that's maybe indicative by the fact that he's watching it from home right now. Yeah. Like, yes, we've seen the changing of the guard and our guard isn't even there holding guard anymore. You know, like that's what's saddest to me.
Well, I think Mick Fanning, in that analogy, Mick Fanning was the guard. Like he was surfing so insane in that heat. Remember, he picked off the first two waves. He got nines or
you're
something.
Like, oh,
yeah,
crap.
Heat's Mick's, over. Yeah.
Heat's over. John,
and he absolutely killed it. I mean, Mick Fanning surfed in a manner that if any of us even could do half of one of those turns, we'd be, you know. But he was shut down by John Florence.
He went from comboing John to being comboed by John.
And I think what I said is Mick Fanning just became Taylor Knox or something like that. Like, here's this ultimate power surfer who just has got great style. Everything is insane about him. But he's not going to be able to compete at the level that this new progression is at.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's a little bit sad, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's like, yeah, you expect to see that happen at Trestles, maybe, or certainly Brazil high performance waves, but you don't expect to see it happen at Bell's.
No.
And if it can happen at Bell's, it could happen at JP.
That's what made Bell's sort of exciting again.
Yeah, totally. It's what made John's surfing exciting at Margaret too, was his progression and innovation, but he applied it there on the rail. Anyway, super exciting. One other storyline, Glendon Ringrose. What the heck?
That's not a storyline. That's a wild card.
Are you kidding? That is the best storyline in the event.
Why?
He's a cancer survivor.
Okay.
Who he's 40.
Where did you learn that? I didn't know he was a cancer.
They talked about it at length through the broadcast.
I turned those guys off. No, I'm just kidding.
He's a cancer survivor in recent years. I think it was testicular cancer.
Oh, wow.
And he's fully in remission. He runs the rescue team at Bell's and at Snapper and at Fiji. He used to be a World Tour surfer, but he's 45.
Yeah, yeah. No,
he's
45 years old. I mean, I get that part of the story, but it's only a story if he gets through to the fourth round or something.
No. It's a story because he won the trials event over everybody else, the hot young up-and-comers. He didn't get gifted this spot.
No, I agree. I'm not doubting that.
Dude,
I'm not doubting he's a world-class surfer. I'm just saying that story has way more legs if he's on into the event, deep, like middle of the road into the event.
It has more legs at that point, but it's not a non-story because he didn't. The fact that he's surfing against Jordy in the event, who went on to win the event, in round one, he was surfing against John. You have a 20-year separation between these guys. A former World Tour surfer who's gone through retirement, cancer, acquiesced his entire like pro surf career, goes and does the trials, wins the thing in really, really challenging conditions, which is why he probably won. He was most well-suited in those conditions. And then he's surfing against the world title. That's a great story.
It is.
Phenomenal story. So shout out to Glendon. Here's the other thing
it's
that we...
good story.
Here's the other thing we need to discuss. The non-interference.
Oh my God. Zeke Lau.
Yeah.
That was such... That
you
was such good
excitement for this.
That was such good drama.
So...
That was such unreal drama.
So Zeke Lau... gets an interference called. He was winning the heat handily in round four. He gets an interference called on him in the closing second of the heat on him on Felipe, which meant that Zeke was going to lose the heat, Felipe, even though he like won in terms of scores. And it was all due to him taking off on a wave. He had priority. Felipe takes off on a wave. So in theory, Zeke could have taken off on that wave. But the buzzer sounded
after signifying the end of the heat.
And then Zeke stood up thinking he had priority, which he didn't because the heat's over, and then took off on Felipe. Judges called it an interference. Well, when you look at the replay, it looks like he stood up before the buzzer, which in fact he did in reality. But they called the interference against him. Zeke contested it, and then they went and reviewed the tape and then reversed the decision, saying, oh, you're right, you stood up before the buzzer. Well, everything got sorted out in the wash. It was all fine in the end. But the question for you and I to discuss is, Richie Porta came on the air and said, we reviewed the tape and he stood up after the buzzer. And that was because Richie Porta was reviewing a separate tape that wasn't synced with the sound in real time. You and I, as the viewers and the commentators, everything that's going out on the webcast was in real time. And it was obvious that Zeke stood up prior to the buzzer. Apparently the judges have a separate feed that isn't synced.
You know what my conspiracy brain thought of?
Tell me.
Eddie Rothman called those guys up and said, what the fuck? Eddie Rothman called up and said, do not come to Hawaii this year unless you overturn this rule.
Yeah.
Now that's just, you know, I'm just joking. I thought but that was what came to my head. All of a sudden, 20 minutes later, they reversed the call.
And Beach Grit, I think, published the story that was like, did Zeke pull a Sonny? Because Sonny would go up in the old days and like shout at the judges and, you know,
I don't think Zeke did that.
No, he didn't do that.
And to me, one of the greatest parts of this drama that unfolded was Peter Mel making a call in the booth right away. Like, I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that needs to happen more. Like, just look, this is what I saw. This is honestly how I feel about this. I'm just the color commentary guy. I'm not the judges. I don't make the final call. But in my opinion, Zeke was good. It was all good. And that's the kind of thing that needs to continue. That's because that's what everyone else is thinking. You just got to, the color guy has to look at it from the standpoint of you and I watching it at home, you know.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What the hell, though? Like,
I know. Good drama.
No, but why would the judges have a separate feed than what we have? Do they have better angles than we have? And if not, if they do, then why can't we have those angles? Like, I don't understand.
Well, this is where the conspiracy, where the phone call from Eddie Rothman comes in.
Isn't it bizarre?
It is a little bizarre.
Like, why are they... And then also, like, are they not watching it live? Because if you're watching it live, and you clearly can hear the buzzer, the horn, and you're watching Zeke stand up, like, there was no call to even be made. It was obvious that he stood up before. So when they go to review the tape, why is that different? not synced in real
time?
Well,
the interesting thing is, and I think there's some truth to this, is, you know, how sound travels, you know, and so when the buzzer goes zero and they go, okay, push the button, you know, there is probably a half a second between the time it goes to zero and that surfer in the water hears the sound.
Right.
And I bet that he stood up after it went to zero, but before he heard the horn. And I think that's where they really got into some nitty gritty and combed through it and went, you know what? We got to do the right thing here. You know, if the onus is on us to make the horn sound and be heard at, with him when it goes exactly to zero, then we have to push the button on the horn just a little before it actually goes to zero. And we didn't do that. And so I'm sure these are some of the conversations, and I'm just assuming, I'm not sure, but I bet this is the type of conversation that went down during those 20 minutes when there was discussion about this.
Yeah, that, to be honest, to me, is moot, because the place that the camera is positioned is not in the water away from the sound of the horn. The camera and the horn are near one another, so there's no variation, there's no lag time there. The camera's recording Zeke standing up at the moment that the horn is sounded, and Zeke stood up before the moment that the horn was sounded.
I'm just saying that the time it takes for the sound to reach Zeke is probably right around a half a second.
Agreed, but Zeke stood up before the horn even sounded.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I think he's good. And by the way he handled it was great.
Right? I thought so too.
Because there was a little bit of angst, and there deserves to be. You know, it's a highly competitive situation, and it just stunk. Like if it wouldn't, it would have really hung over the event. Mm-hmm. In a negative way, if they didn't just do the right thing. And the feeling is, overwhelmingly, is that, you know what, they did get it right. Now, Richie Porta coming on and you know, right away and backing up his decision and then changing it, that's a little problematic.
But it was weird that he blamed it on a technical error when all of us are viewing one version of something that was so egregious. And then him going, oh, no, we're viewing this other version that has a technical error in it. We're like, dude, you guys are the judges. You guys are the final decision makers. Why do you have an inferior version to what we have? And why aren't you just watching our version? Or if you have a supposedly better version, then why aren't we watching what you're watching? Like, it was just bizarre.
I think maybe there was a little fudging going on there. Like, yeah. That's just like, basically what they needed to say was,
we blew it.
Yeah, we kind of blew it,
yeah.
You know, and instead they went, well, there were some technical things and blah, blah, and we have this version and then there's another version. And if I wasn't so busy investigating Trump and Russia, I would look into this a little deeper.
I will say, I do like that they're having Richie Porta on to discuss these things. Like in the past, these discussions weren't even available to us, and it was just strictly us complaining and the internet complaining.
Yeah.
So it's good that they're now trying to create transparency, and in their transparency, they're making errors that we're now complaining about. We're basically going to complain no matter what they do. But, you know, I want to acknowledge that they're at least making it available to us. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So getting off the bells and the WSL thing, I don't think enough people found this, but a couple of nights ago, Kelly Slater posted an Instagram story with him recording a podcast with somebody, and I immediately got jealous.
Sure.
I was like, what the heck? Kelly recording who is this podcaster and how did they get Kelly? We need Kelly on the show, right?
Yeah.
Well, this podcast was kind of the best thing I've ever listened to from Kelly Slater.
Yeah.
It's called the Traveling Health and Wellness Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You can find it on iTunes. You might not be able to find it by searching that title because he misspelled the word traveling. The owner of this podcast misspelled the word.
There's somebody that's worse at this than me.
Exactly.
Rejoice.
So he put two L's in the word traveling. I was able to find it just by searching Kelly Slater. Unless maybe like it's not a proper English versus American English thing. Like,
oh, yeah, there's that.
Maybe they spell. In Australia, they use two L's in the word traveling. I don't know. But anyway, the owner is one Shannon Brenton, and he's kind of a health and wellness expert, I suppose. And he has Kelly on the show to discuss health and wellness and his athleticism and all that sort of thing. It's about an hour and 45 minutes long. And Kelly, he's so calm and he's so zen. But he's actually speaking very quietly in terms of volume, mm-hmm. but very, very openly throughout the entire thing, talking about his shortcomings as a father, talking about a lot of the fallout of his parents' divorce and how that's affected Kelly, talking about an incident being held underwater by an older kid in a swimming pool when he was 8 years old that had detrimental effects on the way that he had anxiety in the ocean throughout his life, and a specific incident surfing an outer reef with the Malloys and Shane Dorian in the 90s where he overcame that and had like this epiphany of being held underwater when he was a kid and having to face that fear and getting over that and how that's opened up his life afterward. It was compelling. And I felt like I became personal friends with Kelly just by listening to it. It was really, really radical.
Well, we'll have to get that up on the site.
Yeah.
Because we know that he's always, that he can be, you know, very forthcoming. And it sounds like this is maybe his opus regarding that. So looks forward to listening to that.
It was crazy. And it was recorded during the Margaret River event after Kelly had lost. Mm. So we had a lot of time and they were recording in the middle of the night because at one point the interviewer goes, "Hey, you know, we're 5 minutes away from midnight. So in the sake of wrapping up," and Kelly's like, this was an hour and 30 minutes into the show. And Kelly's like, "No, it's all good. I got nowhere to go." And the guy's like, "Well, I'm exhausted. So let's wrap this up." And Kelly's like, "Whatever you want. It's up to you." I was just amazed at how Kelly was just giving the guy everything, more than what the guy was asking. Kelly was opening and pouring up. So I'll have a link to it on surfsplendorpodcast.com. One side note, actually, that Kelly talked about was they were talking about the wave pools, and Kelly said, you know, one of the first people that I had come surf it with me was Kanoa Igarashi, the Japanese surfer. And
no, Kanoa's an American.
He's going to surf for Japan in the Olympics in 2020.
Oh, by the way,
he was born in Japan.
Let me know when you want me to kick into my Olympic surfing take.
Okay, after this will segue into it. So he was saying, like, Kanoa was there and he caught his first wave. And after he kicked out, I looked over and Kanoa's dad was at the side of the pool crying because this was a culmination of, like, he brought his kid to America to become a professional surfer. His kids achieved that goal, qualified for the world tour, is now surfing in a wave pool with Kelly Slater, the greatest surfer of all time. He's going to surf in the 2020 Olympics for the nation of Japan. They potentially will have wave pools in the Olympics in the future. Like, all this came together for Kanoa's dad, and he's crying on the side of the wave pool. And Kelly's like, it brought me to tears, you know, that.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was such a heartwarming story. And like, I not to name drop or anything, but like, you know, I live in Huntington Beach and like I've spent a lot of time with Kanoa and I know his dad as well. And I actually surfed with Kanoa this past weekend and caught up with him for the first time since he's qualified for tour. So there was a personal element for me involved with the story. I thought it was really, really radical. And those are the kind of stories that came out on this podcast. So
I've surfed against his dad.
No.
Here's the deal. So when my son was 5 years old, Kanoa was like four or something, right?
Yeah.
And we're in the Rob Machado surf contest for kids, you know, down in Cardiff, right? And we're in the 4 and 5 year old division. So all the parents are like in knee deep water and I'm pushing my son into waves and he's like barely standing up and just grinding his fins onto the sand. You know, like we're in ankle deep water. Kanoa and his dad are 300 yards outside. Kanoa's dad's swimming with him out there with fins on and pushing little Kanoa, who's like the size of like Ted in that movie.
Tiny.
And he's catching waves and like riding him for hundreds of yards all the way to the beach and then paddling back out with his dad.
Smoking.
And the rest,
everybody.
Oh yeah. The rest of us are like, dude, this is over. Like, you know, we were all, you know, I guess we were all sort of bummed. We're like, that's not fair, man. Blah, blah, blah. I thought my kid was better than your kid, but this kid's way gnarlier.
It's embarrassing to like have heavy. That level of commitment sometimes because you want to just like take it easy and be cool. But that's what it takes to get to that elite level. You know what I mean?
Well, to his credit, it wasn't like he was – it doesn't look like Kanoa wasn't stoked. Like there's some football, baseball dads that are pushing their kids to a place where it's just going to go who's – you know, Marinovich, Todd Marinovich on you and just like – blow up in your face. But
yeah, and the kid doesn't want to be there in the first place.
There's major issues between the father and the son. But that didn't seem to be the case. I mean, Kanoa was stoked. And there is that, and I don't know if this is going to come off as, might come off a little weird, but it seems like the culture of Japan has this real hard work ethic. And it like Kanoa has that hard work ethic and he doesn't have a problem with it. It's like, you know, we're going to start working hard at the age of four to get to this place. And it's not like a big deal. It's like, hey, that's what we do. We're Japanese. We work our asses off. And look, we get rewarded because of it.
When you look at Japan as a nation being decimated after World War II.
You're racist.
And the way that they have rebuilt their economy and culture or, country since then, where they're leaders in technology and efficiency and all, it's remarkable. Like, it is an example that we can follow without a doubt. The bullet trains, like all of it, you know, it's insane.
Well, I mean, look, the U.S. had a big part in that after World War II. Marshall Plan?
Yeah, no. I'm not saying we didn't, but like their level of efficiency and productivity that they've generated in the last 50, 60 years.
They took what was given to them and they dominated with it. Yeah,
no question about it.
And absolutely,
it translates to the athletes and to academics and all that sort of thing, which is what you're saying in terms of the athlete.
So I went to the Friends of Olympic Surfing soiree at Fernando's house.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. It's a cool little thing. He just kind of, every year he brings people there and he summarizes what happened in the last year. And there's a call to action. If you want to help however you can, donate or give some time or whatever. But he always gives some insight into what's happening with Olympic surfing, right?
So it's like a formal event?
Yeah.
Presentation?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And you know, there's surf industry people there. That's what it is. It's the Friends of Olympic Surfing. You know, it's people that have donated money to this cause since the beginning. And frankly, they're all there and they're celebrating Fernando as they should, because this guy is the driving force behind why we're in Japan in 2024. Like, it's mind blowing. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago at this event, Fernando was even, no, it's 2020. And Fernando was saying, hey, looks like 2024 could happen. And then all of a sudden, they backdoored their way into the 2020 Olympics in Japan for a number of reasons, which I can get into later if you're interested. But basically, the Olympic Committee, International Olympic Committee, was like, we got to get rid of some of these lame sports and we got to get sports that kids are into. And so that's how surfing and skateboarding backdoored their way into 2020, is that they got rid of some sports, or they're trying to get rid of some sports, and they're putting sports in that are more youth-oriented. So anyway, so here's what I learned. First of all, the Hawaii will not be a nation state separate. It's just the USA surf team.
Okay.
So whatever that means, if it's John, but the qualifying is going to take place and has to take place. In other words, you would think that you could just go, okay, who are the two best Americans on the WSL ranking in 2019, at the end of 2019, and those will be our 2020. That's how we will qualify. We'll just take the two best. We'll take Kolohe and John, for instance, at this point, perhaps. But no, you have to actually go through the International Olympic Committee's qualifying procedure. So there's qualifying that begins 2 years prior. So in 2018, the qualifying process for the United States Olympic team will take place. Will begin to take place. There will not be a wave pool in Japan.
It's too early.
And frankly, what I took away from the meeting was, while they hope that there's great waves and all that, this is more about creating a scene at the event site for surfing that is the coolest event site, so that everybody in the Olympic Village wants to go down to the beach and hang out at the event site that is the surfing event site.
Okay.
Why? Because there's Jack Johnson, there's G Love, there's Donovan, there's these guys playing great music every night. It's a festival down at the surfing site. Oh, by the way, there's also the surf site has this great thing where they're promoting yoga and health and wellness. And so there's these whole yoga things, like ongoing yoga classes. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of sustainability and environmental consciousness and that type of thing. There's booths, there's excitement, there's energy, there's information, there's panels and discussions and seminars. So the event site, what they're really trying to do is create the lifestyle vibe there, so that everybody in the Olympics is like, what are you doing tonight? I'm going down to the surf site because there's this cool thing down there. That's the cool place to be. And if they can do that, they're confident that they will be invited back into the Olympics, because right now surfing is just a trial sport. They're in the Olympics. They're going to be medals, but they're not completely secure for 2024 and 2028 and going forward. And so Fernando and the ISA really is trying to create a situation so that the International Olympic Committee is like, we love you guys even more than we thought we did. Your event site was the cool happening place. You're definitely in 2024. You are now a full-time sport. You don't have to stress anymore. So does that mean that surfing takes a backseat to the event site? In some regards, I think it does. The waves are going to come or they're not. You can't control it, but you can't control a cool scene on the beach, which is what they're going to do. Now, let's just say the waves are bad or the waves are good. Look, the guys are going to go compete and there's going to be medals and it is what it is. And once we get full status into the Olympics, then we can start addressing the surfers' needs and going, hey, okay, look, wave pools do make sense. Let's do this. Let's do that. Plus, technology will have evolved in those times. And we can start to address that. But this 2020 Olympics is really going to be about impressing the IOC with what the surf site will look like.
And what it has to offer.
What it has to offer the world. What it has to offer NBC. What it has to offer the Olympics at large. All of those things.
So I understand the strategy. My, potential criticism is, does this not sound exactly like what you complain about with the U.S. Open every year?
Yeah, it kind of does. It
sounds exactly the same.
Except the U.S. Open, that demographic, like the U.S. Open invites all those 90, like the 909ers come there to drink, to get drunk, to listen to the music, and to watch the skateboarding and the BMX. And, oh, by the way, there's a surf contest going on over there. The International Olympic Committee event site for the Olympics in 2020 is going to be surf. It's going, and it's not going to, you don't have that Inland Empire that's going to invade and take ecstasy and get arrested and cause riots. This is Japan. So it's a different environment to set up a surfing contest event site.
Yeah. I agree with you, but I don't think you can fully manage who shows up to things like that and how they participate in things like that and how long until it devolves into that. Like, you can say, we're not going to have a skate ramp. We're going to have a yoga seminar instead. But then down the road, when somebody wants to buy advertising and sponsorship, Red Bull's the guy, or Monster Energy.
Well, here's the deal, right? Who owns sponsorship for these events?
I don't know.
The Olympics.
Yeah.
There's no buying in. You know who owns it? Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Or IBM or whoever the main sponsors of the Olympics in, they've already bought it. Yeah. Like, you can't go sell the stage to Red Bull and sell the skate park to Vans, and you know, that's not happening.
Yeah.
They own it, they wrap it up. You're just lucky to be invited to the party.
It mitigates some of that.
It does. And it's in Japan, and it's just a one-time thing. It's not year after year. It's every 4 years. Now, interestingly, guess who's in the running for 2024 Olympics? There's two cities that it's come down to.
Los Angeles?
Yes.
And?
Paris.
Oh, okay.
Los Angeles and Paris are in the running for 2024. Both of those offer surfing beaches. If it's LA, you can do it at Trestles. You can do it at Malibu. You can do it up in Ventura at C Street. There's plenty of places to hold surfing events. You may recall, in the 1984 LA Olympics, they did the equestrian events down in San Diego. So they're not averse to traveling to get stuff done.
It's a two and a half hour drive for people who aren't from the area.
But the equestrian was done at Fairbanks Ranch in Rancho Santa Fe.
That's what I mean. 2.5 hour drive from the Olympic site.
Right. And so to drive from the Olympic sites in LA to Trestles is what, an hour and 15 minutes or something, you know, depending on traffic. To go to Malibu, I could see it being done at Malibu. All the infrastructure, parking could be a nightmare. But if LA gets it, they've got plenty of surfing. If Paris gets it, they've got Biarritz, Surf Central of Europe. That's the now I don't know how far is Paris from Biarritz. 2 hours?
I'm not sure either.
I don't know. You could probably Google
I've driven it.
Oh, well, so it's doable.
I just can't remember. Yeah. It's like,
so they'll have it at Biarritz. So will there be a wave pool? I don't know, but we don't need one. Now, they could still have a wave pool for the Olympics in 2024. The other interesting thing is that whatever city gets 2024, the other city then gets 2028. It's already been decided.
That's cool.
So surfing is guaranteed beaches for the next three Olympic cycles.
Awesome.
Through 2028. By 2028, you would think that they're going to have wave pool tech. The technology is already there, but somebody's going to invest in a wave pool so that the next Olympic Games, in other words, surfing in the Olympics looks really, really good if they can pull off a really great 2020 and impress the hell out of the IOC.
Awesome. That's really, by the way, Paris to Biarritz looks like it's an hour.
Yeah, so that's totally doable.
Unless I put in the wrong Biarritz in my phone. I don't know. Yeah, well, that's exciting. And it sounds like you said, all the infrastructure has kind of come together to give us the potential for the next couple of years.
Yeah, the next three Olympic cycles. If they can impress the heck out of the IOC in Japan, which knowing Fernando, I know they will because that guy gets stuff done.
Yeah.
And Bob Fusilla, I think I'm saying his name right, is the executive director of the ISA. He's got plenty of Olympic experience. So, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I just update my Google Maps says it's actually 7 hours to Biarritz.
Oh.
Biarritz is in the far southwest near the border of Spain.
Yeah.
And then Paris is in the... But there are beaches.
Closer to Paris?
Well, there's coastline closer to Paris. I'm not sure which beaches. But,
sure they would want to do it in Biarritz, but
yeah,
7 hours is kind of a haul.
A little bit. What do you got? Do you got any other topics?
Well, you know, the surf demo for the Boardroom International Surfboard Show is Sunday morning, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Many of the exhibitors will be there. You can ride their boards.
Yeah, everybody shows up with boards that you can demo. I surfed a asymmetrical Donnie Brink last year.
Very good.
Yeah.
So Sunday morning, 15th Street Reef in Del Mar is the surf demo, free and open to the public.
Can I give you a Duke and a Kook and a must-see moment?
Yes.
What do you want to hear first?
I do not care. Go for it.
Must-see moment?
Sure.
Matt Miola's new film.
Oh, I saw that.
Numb.
So good.
Just hit yesterday or the day before.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
You know, the greatest part of that movie is Lily Miola singing that song.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
So Lily,
that's what stuck out to me, because Matt Miola doing airs over and over, it's insane. It's great. It's rad. The last one's intense. But you get a little numb to it. Speaking of numb, isn't it called Numb?
It is. That's the name of her song.
Because one of their friends died or something. It's sort of an...
Okay. So Lily Miola is a pretty well-respected musician at this point. She's actually managed, believe it or not, by the legendary Shep Gordon, who is most famous for building Alice Cooper's career. He's worked with Teddy Pendergrass, all sorts of... And he was actually largely responsible for launching the celebrity chef as we know it, working with Emeril Lagasse, Wolfgang Puck, all these guys. And the reason I know all this is because there was a documentary that Mike Myers made about him called Supermensch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's phenomenal. It's a great documentary. But this guy, Shep Gordon, is just this legendary mensch of a guy in the music scene and, of course, now in Hollywood. And he has a home on Maui. And his personal assistant is Matt Miola's mother. I forget what her name is. And so they've been working together for a very long time. And Lily Miola is this up-and-coming musician on Maui. So through the connection with Matt and Lily's mother, Shep started managing her career. And that's, I think, done wonders for her. She's actually pretty well... I mean, she's more famous probably than Matt is as a surfer, just because music is such a larger platform. At any rate, Lily Miola, as Scott said, has this song called Numb that they use in the soundtrack for this edit. Matt Miola has been injured for the last year. Back injury, knee injury, because his surfing is so...
crazy.
It's
It's gymnastic.
It's gymnastic is what it is. So this is his first edit. It basically covers his winter season as he came back from this injury, these injuries. Every single image in this edit is an absolute banger. The surfing is mind-bending. It's game-changing. From the opening shot of him jumping off this rock into the water and the drone that tracks it and the timing of it, like that shot's incredible. And then the surfing is just unbelievably explosive. He's doing not only the airs that Scott's mentioning, but he's doing the claybacks, you know, Clay Marzo's layback, where you just blow out the fins and you go into a one-legged layback. He's doing those better than Clay even does them on sections that are gnarlier. He's hitting sections that are double overhead with crazy wind and basically full force going into the lip, throwing the board and just seeing where it goes. And in one of the claybacks, the board actually spins into a 360 and he gets up and rides out of it. It's insane. As if his front foot just holds it in a pivot and the board spins under his foot and then he gets back up. He's contorting in waves that are, or I'm sorry, in ways that are completely unexpected, where he hits the lip, a gust of wind hits him, and he goes into a spin that he wasn't expecting to. Like, he's going up there and improvising mid-flight. We saw John do that alley-oop at Bell's where the wind flutters his board under his feet and then he catches it and stomps it. Miola is getting hit by gusts of wind.
Well, he's doing grabs and double grabs, and he has to. There's a few where he's not grabbing, but most of them, and he even mentions, did you read the Q&A at the bottom of
on the Surfline post?
Yeah, and he even mentions, look, you're going to do tighter, quicker, faster spins if you double grab and pull the board in close to your body. And
he's talking about one air specifically.
Yeah, the end one.
The end one, which was, he titled a spindle flip when he did it a couple years ago. And it's a double spin. And the spindle flip's more inverted, but that one that he did in this edit, it's flatter. And they were comparing it to Kelly Slater's that he did at Portugal a couple years ago. And they're like, look, Kelly did a double grab, but it was on one rail. You're doing a double grab on both rails. And he said exactly what you said. You can spin tighter and faster. But he's doing other airs in the edit that aren't grabs. Like he does, any one of those airs in the edit is mind-blowing.
Oh, no.
And then that one's the most mind-blowing of them all.
Yeah, he's incredible. I mean, it's on a whole freaky level.
It is.
I was bringing up the double grabs because, as you know, there's been a lot of, I mean, back when, I don't know, I want to say 10 years ago or something, there was a lot of chatter about, oh, if you grab rail, you're lame.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's doing things in conditions that I think, you know, require you to grab the rail. Although I'm sure he's setting up those sessions so that the wind's blowing into him, so it's ideal to not grab the rail. I'm not an expert, but...
But it's already a windy... Like Maui, it's super windy. So windy all the time.
And I just think that at the level he's doing things, the whole, oh, he grabs the rail, that's lame, argument is sort of mute.
I agree. I think it's... I haven't even heard a lot of vitriol because it's so gnarly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, we've gotten to a place where it's beyond being worried about if you're double grabbing on a glassy day at Trestles.
Yeah. The thing that blows my mind is the amount of projection that he's hitting the lip with, the amount of force that he's hitting the lip with. He's bottom turning with so much, I don't know, projection off the bottom, going into a lip that's sometimes well overhead with all this wind and unpredictability, and he just hits the lip and goes into the air, and it's like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And like I said, gusts hit him and all these things happen, and he just goes with it. He improvises midair, and he gets so much loft and rotation because of that bottom turn. And then he's so Gumby-like that he lands things that are just crazy, which is why he was injured for so long, you know?
Well, I just think
my mind was blown.
Me too. I loved it. And again, I loved Lily Miola. I had this ignorant vision of Lily Miola, like strumming the ukulele and singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow or something. You know, like, I didn't realize how emotive and how powerful. She sounded more like she could be singing in a Pink Floyd song, because she belts out some pretty, it was just powerful singing. Like, it was sincere. You know, it sounded like it came from her heart. Like, it was.
I agree.
As radical as the surfing was, I was taken by her singing.
I was too. And it wasn't just her vocals. There was a lot of arrangement and like production in the song. It was clearly like a professionally produced, arranged song.
And I believe about this guy who passed, his name, there's that one part in the video where he signs the guy's name on the finished surf.
Oh, like, I didn't connect those dots.
Yeah.
You're right.
I think it's Greg.
So is he shaping now? Because
it looked like it out. It looked like it. I thought that part of the video was a little bit planned and a little bit, you know, maybe, I don't want to say trite. I think they wanted to convey the message that this is dedicated to my friend, you know? Okay. And so they wrote his name on that blank. I think they could have done that in a better way that didn't, because to me, I went, this seems forced.
Yeah, well, so he goes into the shaping room. There's a machine-shaped board sitting there that he scrubs out and finishes. In my, from my memory, I remember him riding boards by, is it Sean Ordonez? Is that the Maui shaper? I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name
correctly. Yeah, that is the right name.
Okay,
yeah.
That's who I've seen him ride boards from in the past. I don't know whether he's getting them now. But that's my must-see moment. I'm going to give you a Duke and a Kook that are somewhat related. My Duke is the rescue team comprised of Kelly Slater, Ross Clark Jones, Tom Carroll, Ryan Hipwood, and Ben Serrano, who saved Russell Bierke's life.
Yes.
They were all surfing Port Campbell. The waves were about 15 feet. Russell took off on one. He fell and got hit by his board and knocked unconscious. The board was left with a dent. Now, we're talking about a 9-foot surfboard weighing 22 pounds, 10 kilos.
How big was the dent?
I don't know. Huh. I didn't see a photo of it, but they said it left a dent. But I mean, a 9-foot board getting hit by that thing.
No, that's like a beam.
Pounds.
That's like a wooden beam falling on your head from the ceiling.
Totally.
Like, yeah.
So he was knocked completely unconscious. Ryan Hipwood noticed him. They sent the ski in and rescued him, and they got him to the beach. And Kelly said if it wasn't for the ski, it would have been a 20-minute paddle from where they were to the beach.
Sure.
And he was completely unconscious.
Oh, he would have died.
So he more than likely would have died. They got him to the beach. They said he was blue as a Smurf. When they revived him, he was vomiting up water, completely bloodshot. I mean, the guy was on the brink of death.
Yeah.
So shout out to the rescue team for being there, seeing it, and being so on top of things. I'll also give a shout out to the man himself, Russell Bierke, who won the Cape Fear event last year when he was 18 years old, jumped
into
our
awareness. One of the best events ever.
Best event, and the kid dominated. Like,
he was so good.
Fearlessly.
That was so entertaining.
And I've reposted his edit, Berserky, is what they labeled it.
Yeah.
His last name, on surfsplendorpodcast.com. So if you want to check that out and refamiliarize yourself with Russell Bierke, the kid's an animal.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah, I'm glad they saved that guy. I mean, I'm a big fan of his. He's sort of an interesting situation. I'm glad they had the ski there. And skis do save people's lives.
Well, that segues into my kook, which is...
Surf rider?
No. It's the state lawmakers in Hawaii, led by State Rep Scott Nishimoto, who is looking to change the language in a bill that will eliminate the protection provided to the lifeguards of Hawaii from potential lawsuits filed by people that they are rescuing.
Why?
Are you familiar with this?
I didn't get into it, but I saw that there was some chatter about it online, but I didn't get into it.
Basically, the lifeguards in Hawaii have had this bill passed in 2002 that protects them from frivolous lawsuits. Like, if they're going to save somebody's life and they're not able to, or something goes wrong, the people that they're trying to save or those people's family are not allowed to sue the lifeguards over negligence.
Right.
Is essentially what this bill provides.
Right.
And other life rescuers like policemen, firemen don't have that protection. Lifeguards are the only people that have that protection.
Right.
Well, the problem is that there's apparently a group of attorneys that wants to change this legislation, and they're pushing for it. So there's a bill that it just changes the language in the bill, basically, and that's going to go to a vote on June 30th, and this Scott Nishimoto is pushing for it. And the lifeguards are saying, whoa, 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 we need this protection because, look, the ocean is unpredictable, and there's all these crazy things that can happen, and we aren't willing to do our job and put our lives on the line if something goes wrong and then we get sued for millions of dollars, you know, and lose our job and lose our livelihood and all that sort of stuff. This is going to open it up to frivolous lawsuits, basically. That's what is liable to happen. So I'm suggesting that the lawmakers are the kooks for trying to change
it
this
seems
thing and jeopardize.
What I'm reading about this is that personal injury lawyers have lobbied lawmakers in Hawaii, namely Scott Nishimoto, to change this. And they probably threw a bunch of dollars at their reelection campaigns and said, take this out, take this wording out of this bill. I mean, out of that legislation that's already in there. And yeah, it's kind of blown up online a little bit.
Look, you want to make some recourse available to people for negligence provided or that's potentially perpetrated by whoever, police, whatever. But at the same time, these lifeguards in Hawaii, you and I know, they aren't getting rich doing it. They're not going to go out there and try to rescue somebody at Pipeline drunk on the job or doing it negligently. Like, they're looking out for their best interest first and foremost in terms of surviving the situation. So they're doing that fully trained and able in their best state of health and mind to make that rescue. They wouldn't be doing it negligently. They wouldn't be putting their own life on the line to rescue a tourist. And by the way, Scott, how many horror stories have we heard from lifeguards and from people who are now surfing in Hawaii during the winter going, dude, these tourists show up who don't know how to swim and they wade into the water at Pipeline on a flotation device thinking that they're going to just like go for a swim. Like, people are idiots. And these lifeguards are the ones saving these people. So we need to back the lifeguards and put our support behind the lifeguards in that they can support them just knowing that they're using their best judgment in these situations, period. You know?
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I can't imagine anyone wanting to take those protections away from the lifeguards. It's just stupid.
Yeah. So that's my kook.
Yes. Scott Nishimoto. Kook.
All the state lawmakers.
Well, we got a big show, Boardroom. Everybody should come out. It's going to be a lot of fun. May 6th and 7th, Del Mar Fairgrounds. We've got the guy who makes Dave Rostovich's surfboards, Gary McNeil. He's one of the shapers in the Shape Off. I ordered a board from him. I'm looking forward to getting that.
Nice.
And Matt Kinoshita from Maui. He's coming over. Maui. John Pizel.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, makes John boards. Johnny Cabianca makes Gabriel Medina's boards. Come meet these guys. They're all going to be there and hundreds of other shapers and board builders.
Everybody under one roof. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then ride the board Sunday morning, Del Mar, 15th Street.
Yeah. I'll be there.
More information, tickets and information at boardroomshow.com. The same place you can get Down the Line Surf Podcast, just like you can get Down the Line Surf Podcast at surfsplendor.com. Right, David?
You mean Surf News with Scott Bass?
I thought we went through this. This is your chance to just like embrace the Down the Line Surf Pod brand.
Can't strong arm me, Scott.
I'm not. I'm just. I don't understand why are you confusing everybody?
There's no confusion. Everybody knows what's up.
So did everything we talked about just go down the drain?
Well, anyway,
you don't want Down the Line Surf Podcast to be the name of. Anyway. Why are you giving me the hand? You're like,
oh no, we'll talk about it.
Oh man, people want to hear this on the air.
They heard it.
Let's let the listeners decide.
I think they do. Check the hundreds of comments on my site. How many comments do you have?
Oh, man.
Let's track the numbers. Let's look at the statistics. Let's go to the books.
Okay, so you don't want to call it Downline Surf Podcast anymore?
Anymore?
Yeah.
I never did from the get-go.
No, that's what we call it every time we start the show.
No, that's what you call it when you come into the show.
Right, well, that's what the show's called. It's called Downline Surf Podcast.
No. I mean, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Oh, my God.
I'm not going to commit to it right now because then you'll hold me to the commitment. But I'm open to the discussion. I'm open to the discussion. You're trying to catch me off kilter.
I'm just wondering what you're afraid of.
I'm not afraid of anything, dude. I've built my own thing and I've got all the listenership where I'm not afraid of anything. Like, I could do what I want.
Okay. I got you.
But you just made
it loud and clear. Now I get it. You're ready to go on your own.
That's not what I'm saying at all. That's what you just said. I'm not saying that at all.
You just said you've built your own thing and you've got a good thing and you can do anything you want.
I'm just saying I'm thrilled with the relationship that we have. And I'm
not thrilled enough to call it Downline Surf Podcast.
Well, I think we need to come to an agreement on what we call it. I'm just not going to get bullied into calling it what you want to call it. That's what
it's been called forever. It's not that's like what I you, want.
No, that's what your show's been called together. But I contribute at least 50% to
no,
what
I'm
we've
not
been
doubting
doing for the past
okay,
few
what
years.
Do you want to call it? What do you want to change it to?
Let's get our listeners to chime in. What do they want to hear it called?
Okay, that's a good idea.
I think that's the way to do it.
Chime in. Everybody chime in. You can email David at surfsplendorpodcast.com.
Hello at surfsplendorpodcast.com.
You can email Scott at boardroomshow.com or
post it on Instagram. Let's do it. And it, by the way, the only, it's not like Down the Line and Surf News are the only two options. Give us feedback.
What in my mind, they are.
Are they? Or is that what you're saying? Or
well,
should
it's
we
Down the Line Surf Podcast or something else. You can call it Surf News, you call it whatever. But
that's what I'm saying. Maybe they have a better idea.
The show
what if they
called,
come up with a new name?
Yeah, that's fine. That's,
I'm totally open to that. I'm open to anything. Whatever the listeners want, Scott. Let the people speak.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess that's it for this episode of what we used to call Downline Surf Podcast.
Maybe you'll see us again. Maybe you won't.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, until next time, adios and aloha.
We're back.
We're back. We got some breaking news.
Tell me.
David has decided to call the show.
No. What's the breaking news?
The breaking news is the World Surf League has announced that Outer Known, Kelly Slater's company, brand, clothing company, is the title sponsor for the Fiji Pro this year. A three-year sponsorship of both the men's and the women's event.
3 years?
Three-year sponsorship.
That indicates a commitment.
That indicates nothing, but let's call it a three-year sponsorship if we're still around. Well,
you and I didn't even know if WSL would still be intact.
This doesn't
in
say
days.
They are going to be. I'm just saying that it's kind of like WSL bought Kelly Slater's wave pool. It's like, no, there's no money exchange. They just Kelly just said, hey, I'm part of you. You're part of me.
Well, that's
anyway,
big news.
Outer Known, big news. Breaking news right here. Thanks awesome. To our email that they sent out to the world.
Perfect. All right. Good job,
okay.
Scott.
Adios and aloha.
There you go. Scott and I chatted a little bit after the show about this, and we haven't resolved anything, essentially. And I think, to be honest, as always, this is kind of a community, and it's an open discussion with you guys, the listeners. So by all means, send us your feedback, and we'd love to hear what you have to say about it. I will share a few thoughts with you, and I'll share them with Scott, too, when we reconnect. But I certainly want to share them with you just because I'll be perfectly honest. My allegiance is to you, the listener, more than it is any guest that I've had or any co-host that I've had. So I just want to kind of restate it. The whole conversation took me off guard. And so I didn't really have a chance to collect my thoughts. And I haven't yet listened back to it. So I'm not sure whether or not I fully conveyed my thoughts. So I'm going to kind of rehash it now that it's settled in. It's been probably 2 hours or so since Scott and I recorded. Anyways, I just want to state my intention and my purpose when Scott and I connected 4 years ago to record this show. And my intention was only ever to add value to anything that Scott was doing. Whether it was his podcast legacy with Down the Line or with the Boardroom Show, that's why I've invested my own money into the equipment that we use to record, why I've spent obviously a significant amount of time on post-production, why I track the statistics of the shows. I feel like I've only ever spoken with reverence for Scott's legacy, and I'll be fine continuing onward with our current relationship where we both just publish separately. I was okay with that agreement. I've never brought any of this up. I mean, I'm totally fine, even if I'm the one doing the recording and tracking and all that sort of stuff. In addition to co-hosting, Scott's stance that he brought up on today's show just really, really surprised me because I didn't know that he felt that way. And if he hasn't been able to update a show and get it to show up on iTunes, or if he feels like he's lost some sort of control of the show or some sort of traction with the audience, it's not a reflection of me manipulating anything at all. I've always tried to invest more into this exchange than I've ever taken out of. And that's how I kind of treat relationships in my life with my employer, with my family, with romantic relationships. Like, I want to make sure that the other person feels like they're getting the better of the exchange. So quite frankly, it's confusing to me that Scott and my perspective on this subject is so different. And honestly, it's slightly insulting, and
very disheartening that Scott feels slighted by our exchanges or by our relationship. I feel very proud and confident that I've lifted more than my fair share of the workload through the past 4 years together. And I'd be proud to do it again. And I've never once complained about it or my workload, or I've never even mentioned it on the show. So again, it's really shocking to hear that. I know we both feel inequitable in our exchange, but I'm shocked to hear that Scott feels that he's ending up on the side of getting taken advantage of. And even more shocked, I mean, really insulted to hear him sling mud at me regarding those values and the workload live on the air. It was really, again, shocked by it. I've always kind of enjoyed our dynamic of, you know, frenemy. And it creates, I think, for really good podcasts. And every time that I've received a listener email explaining their distaste for Scott, I've always received five that say that they actually enjoy our dynamic. And I really do, too. I enjoy our dynamic. I think it makes for great podcasting. But I think if Scott feels taken advantage by me or slighted in any way, then perhaps we just have a fundamental different worldview. And I'm not sure that there's any amount of bending that I can do that will bridge that chasm, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So this remains to be continued. I'll keep you posted. And I actually have an episode with Todd Glazer already in the can. I've got one with Keith Malloy already in the can. You'll hear the Todd Glazer one next week. He's talking about his new film that he's partnered with Taylor Steele on called Proximity. And my point is that I have a bunch of stuff for you in coming weeks as the listener, whether Scott and I reconnect or whether it takes a little bit of time to reconnect. That is yet to be revealed. But I really feel that that might actually be dictated by what your guys' thoughts are. And I don't care like whether you side with me or him or whatever. I mean, it might validate my ego somewhat, but I'm more interested in just let me know what your thoughts are and whether they're good, bad, or ugly. And if I'm being dumb, tell me. Be like, dude, you're stupid. This is a minor issue. Figure it out. Move forward. Whatever. I feel a need to mention in regard to people who are financially subscribed to the show and donating. As you know, we have a donation platform. So if you are making that donation, feel free to pause it. Feel free to cancel it. It's easy to do through PayPal. Like I said, I'll continue publishing episodes. But, you know, if you're here for Scott or that you're intending that that goes to Scott, then by all means, put it on pause or put it on cancel or whatever. Just for complete clarity's sake, the way that we divide those funds up is whatever comes in each month, at the end of the month, I tally it up and run all the statistics over the entire history of the show and just divide up the number of dollars that came in by the number of downloads we've gotten. And every show that Scott and I co-hosted, we split 50-50. All the shows that I've produced solely on my own, like Cyrus Sutton last week, I get 100% of. So we just take the total number of dollars that come in, divide it by the total number of downloads, and then divide it up equitably from there. So for clarity's sake, that's how that works. And I mean, even if Scott and I don't reconnect, I will continue to send. If our episodes continue getting downloads, I'll continue to send him his fair share of that. So that's that. Like I said, send us feedback. hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com is my contact information. Scott's is downthelineradio@gmail.com. And then my Instagram is @surfsplendor. Scott's is @boardroomshow. Chime in on there. I'll share whatever emails come in with Scott, hoping he does the same, or you can just copy both of us on those things. Hope you enjoyed the show. This is, as always, David Scales for Surf Splendor, reminding you, despite all the drama, get back in the ocean, get a couple of waves, and shred on.
tearing it up.